Hello, everyone, and welcome back again to the Revenue Podcast. I am your host, Kara French. We appreciate you joining us today. We want to make sure you're visiting our webpage at www.billingplatform.com/podcasts to check out all of our previous episodes. Of course, we are devoted here at the Revenue Podcast to all things revenue, the technology, emerging market trends, and of course, the interesting industry perspectives. I think, of course, by now, you know, if you are a regular listener, we are also always up for the occasional off-the-wall conversation. We are so glad you've joined us today, and we are thrilled to be here talking revenue lifecycle modernization with Matt Rehm. Matt is my colleague here at Billing Platform. He is a director of product marketing, and we have got a lot to cover today about what revenue lifecycle modernization means, what that roadmap looks like, and how implementing these initiatives today can make you the hero of your company. Matt, welcome. We're so glad to have you with us. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks. Great to be here.
All right. So full disclosure, Matt and I, we know each other, so I'm a little bit biased. We work together here at Billing Platform. So he's a great colleague, but I'm going to give you a chance to tell our audience a little bit about yourself and your background.
Yeah, sounds good. I started my career actually when I came out of business school doing accounting and finance jobs, starting with reconciling accounts, cash application, auditing and managing exceptions. And then I moved into FP&A roles at multiple companies, most of those in telecom and then in aviation. During that time, I worked closely with a lot of different CFOs, seeing the challenges they face. One of the interesting things that I think we'll get into is how those challenges and responsibilities that CFOs have changed over time, you know, becoming more strategic in nature, which has been interesting. And so I transitioned into product marketing about 15 years ago, starting with that aviation company, but the last decade of that has been in the billing, revenue, monetization space, with multiple companies. So now I'm targeting those CFOs and other financial leaders that I used to work closely with. And I've been at Billing Platform since November, so I'm happy to be here.
That's great. Yeah, we've loved having you at Billing Platform. And there's so many interesting perspectives. You talk about the variety of things you've done in your career that you've sort of brought to the table in our product marketing department. Just sort of kick things off today. We've asked you to come on to talk about the revenue lifecycle process and the need for enterprises to sort of modernize it, how it's changed, what that looks like. And I think for today's podcast, keeping that sort of at high level, simple. So I want to just begin starting at the top. When we're talking about the revenue lifecycle process, how do you define what that is and what processes that involves?
Yeah, great. Great place to start, definitely at the top. You know, for me, the revenue lifecycle, I think for most companies, this is a similar thing. It's any of those processes that are involved in generating revenue, managing revenue for your business. And different companies might focus on different areas of that. Obviously, you know, part of that is the lead gen qualification conversion, you know, kind of that marketing motion that we're involved in. And that's definitely a part of it. When we talk about it from the Billing Platform perspective, we're really focusing on those areas that our technology helps companies improve in. So starting with, you know, the sales process, from generating quotes, going through negotiations, closing deals, and then into, you know, the billing, invoicing, collections, recognizing the revenue, properly accounting for all of that into reporting. And I think we're going to touch on those in a little bit more detail. But, you know, as Billing Platform, that's kind of what we think about with the revenue lifecycle, right? Every company has their nuances and can focus in different areas. And to answer your next question about why modernize those processes, you know, I think the short answer is you have to modernize or die. Basically, is that too dramatic?
No, I don't think that's too dramatic. I think that's perfect. Modernize or die. I mean, from a business standpoint, you know, things are just rapidly changing, and you you've got to adapt quickly or risk losing, you know, revenue or risk losing ground in your industry.
Exactly. You know, if we look at the history, you know, businesses in the last 30 or 40 years, and, you know, this kind of follows technology as it continues to, and that's a theme of what I want to bring out today. But, you know, when computers got small enough that they didn't take up a whole room anymore, right, there was technology that came up to help businesses manage the business, right? There was CRM systems, customer relationship management systems, like Siebel was a big one, an on-premise system. And then Salesforce obviously took over when the cloud became a thing. And that's kind of what we talk about as the front office, right? That engagement with customers, tracking their data, you know, quoting and some invoicing, things like that. The ERP systems on the back end, the back office, if you want to call it that, things like NetSuite, Oracle, SAP, these are the big players that have come up. And these companies have been around for a long time and they're very successful. And they do a great job at what they were designed to do, right? They do, you know, the basic GL accounting, inventory management, supply chain management, a lot of the basic financial functions. You know, they can do some billing, but it's billing if you've got, you know, an annual contract that, you know, doesn't change very much from year to year. So those have worked great for a long time. As technology has evolved, the way that people expect to buy things and pay for things, the products and services that they use has changed.
Absolutely. Right?
Customers now have higher expectations. Subscriptions, even just moving to a monthly subscription. And we saw a boom in like subscription box companies, you know, a decade or so ago. Mm-hmm. That changed things a lot, but now you're getting into even more complex things like usage and consumption billing. You know, people don't want to pay for, you know, a lot of it is around the large expensive assets, right? People don't want to buy a car. They want to get from point A to point B, mm-hmm. right? So they may get an Uber or a Lyft, or they may want to drive themselves. And so they get a Turo. You know, there's a lot of examples in the B2C economy, but B2B as well. I mean, there's farming equipment that people can now subscribe to the usage of, basically, right?
Right.
Industrial equipment, a lot of those kinds of things. And these are great advances for the customer and for the companies that can keep up with that, right? But the billing and those, you know, those detailed processes get very complex very quickly. So, you know, all throughout the, you know, entire billing, collections, AR, RevRec, into customer service and support, all of that across the board is totally different, right? So that's why it's become necessary to modernize these systems and processes and, you know, to train and hire the right people to run them in order to keep up with customer expectations. So if I can just add one voice of warning here, you know, a lot of people hear that kind of thing and they think, you know, we're fine, right? Our systems Sure. are fine. We're doing great. Our Salesforce.
Been fine for a long time. Yeah, stuff like
yeah.
that.
Yeah, mm-hmm. we've been doing great. We don't have any of these problems you're talking about. But, you know, the real question is, can you grow into the future? I remember talking to one company that they had a billing system that had to be, you know, the actual programmer of this homegrown system had to be involved every month before they could close the books and making updates in the system. So that guy came time for him to retire. You know, no, it's just written in such an old language. No one knew what to do. So, you know, it's not always that dramatic, but
right.
people are finding that they're the systems that may be working now may not work in the future. Right. And so, you know, I think it's, you know, people aren't, you know, it's not a here's our annual subscription anymore for 10 years. Yeah. Right. So it's, you know, with the subscriptions, people can come and go as they want. That's one of the nice things about subscriptions. And so it becomes even more important for businesses to look at that and to think about what are we doing to sustain our business into the future? What are we, you know, are we doing the things to keep our customers happy so that they don't churn, right? And so that we can attract more and be able to grow into the future.
So we're talking about growing into the future. And, you know, like you said, businesses are saying, okay, things are going great. My business is fine. Our processes are in place and they've worked well for us thus far. But when they're ready to make that next step or take that next step, how can they assess, you know, where they are now? What is their current maturity or benchmark themselves against others in their space?
Yeah, great question. You know, bringing up maturity, there's a tool that has been used for a long time, you know, since the 80s. I think it started with, you know, kind of software engineering and the idea of continual improvement, but the maturity model. So, you know, a lot of people are familiar with this idea that a certain process or technology, you know, may be, you know, kind of at a rudimentary phase, and there may be steps along the way to get it to where they want it to be, which is, you know, kind of fulfilling the promise of that technology or that process.
Right.
And so the maturity model provides that structured framework to let people analyze those complex processes and determine where they're at and where they need to be and how to get there. Right. So what we encourage people to do is take a step back, you know, look at those processes, right? The ones we talked about, the invoicing, the billing, the AR, the RevRec, look at those and kind of decide where you're at right now.
Right. Get a baseline. Often, yeah.
Yeah. It's often different from where you want to be. We'll talk about how to get there, but just, you know, putting that stake in the ground and saying, here's where we are. We know what our limitations are. We know what we're good at, and identifying those strengths and weaknesses. I think as far as benchmarking goes, you know, it's helpful to have a source of third-party information. You know, that could be published studies. You know, these companies in your industry are doing X, Y, and Z. You may find that in articles online. Analyst reports are a great place to find that. Okay. If your industry and your processes that you're looking at are big enough for them to have done research around. I think, you know, a lot of times talking to peers helps, you know, a CFO in a particular industry, you know, they may get together at certain events, or they may, you know, attend a similar conference or something, but being able to talk to them openly about, you know, our collections, you know, looks like this. And what are you guys doing? Sure. So that networking, I think, is one place to get an idea. You know, the best benchmarks obviously are going to be against your own company, your own selves over time, right? And so I think even though the data may not be exactly, you know, 100% accurate, you know, it's the trend. You know, it's like using a, you know, if you're using a heart rate monitor, you know, to track your heart rate over time.
Sure.
You know, that number is probably pretty close. You know, can you know if it's 100% exact? No, I don't know, maybe, but
maybe
it doesn't matter that much, right? Because it's the, am I seeing progress over time?
You so know, if you're talking about a heart monitor, or, you know, you're establishing, you know, your baseline or whatever. So kind of switching it back to the business side of things, if you are making this leap and saying, okay, we're going to have an honest assessment and evaluate the revenue lifecycle process, you know, starting out, where are you today? Can you talk a little bit about what the next steps will be, sort of a little bit deeper dive into sort of evaluating where, you know, where you want to go with your revenue lifecycle and how you can evaluate where you are in the process, right? Because it's not just about where you want to go. It's where am I today and how am I going to get there?
Yeah, exactly. And really the easiest, simplest way to do that is, you know, if you've done what we just talked about, you know, put that stake in the ground to say, here's where we are. You know, you put that other stake in the ground and say, here's where we want to be. And you draw a line, right? That's basic math. Mm-hmm. And you set goals on how to get there, right? A lot of times, I think when you look at something like that, you can identify there's certain steps, right? If we want to get from point A to point B, there's this intermediate step that we have to do, right? We have to get a certain technology, or we have to hire a certain skill set, or, you know, we have to adopt a certain process, right? Some of those can become maturity levels or waypoints on the journey, right? And so You know, again, the maturity model is a great way to look at that. And with our customers, what we've seen is, you know, we've kind of grouped that into about four different levels, right? And we call these ad hoc, structured, coordinated, and optimized. So basically, ad hoc is you're doing everything manually, you don't have any systems, the strategy is not really coordinated with the processes, efforts are siloed. It's just the fundamentals, right? You're checking a box to say, we do AR, for sure. Example, or whatever process it is.
Right.
And in the next level, the structured, right, you're probably using Excel, right? Most of the, probably every financial process, right, uses Excel at some point. So you're starting to use a little bit of technology. You're trying to coordinate a little better with strategy and company goals. And then in the coordinated level, the third step is you're really beginning to think about automation. You're defining processes better. You may have some systems that you're using. It could be, you know, the CRM, ERP systems. It could be some standalone system for, you know, invoicing or bill presentment or something. But you're starting to coordinate better with your company strategy, integrate silos. And then the optimize is kind of the top level where you have a really dedicated systems. They all work together in harmony. You're aligned with the strategic objectives of the company, able to provide data that the executives can use to make decisions. And then the most important part, and I may not have mentioned this with the maturity model, but most important part of the maturity model is the idea of continually optimizing and improving.
Okay.
I think that's why it was originally invented in the first place, right?
Okay. So never stop improvements and learning and growing and changing, I guess, based on the data that you've, you know, been able to procure there from your, you know, optimized, you know, strategies.
Exactly. And it's really, it's a mindset. And for a lot of companies, it's a shift in mindset to, you know, yeah, we're doing great. We're at this top level, but you know, there has to be things that we can continue to improve. There's studies that I didn't pull any data out on, but I was just reminded of this the other day, studies that show that, you know, even making small improvements on a regular basis has a huge impact, you know, over the course of a year or more, maybe even less.
Yeah, but small improvements over time. Oh, sorry, yeah, go ahead, Matt.
Yeah, it's exactly. It's just identifying those small improvements that you can make on a day-to-day basis.
So are you looking at, you know, specific processes with, you know, within, you know, when you're talking, okay, so that's the bigger steps there, obviously, but talking about identifying specific processes that you can change just as a way to start out?
Yeah. So if we go back to just a little bit of what we talked about with the revenue lifecycle, the way we've defined this here at Billing Platform, which you're familiar with, is... seven specific dimensions. So I'll just go through what each of these are. And these are, you know, we've identified these based on our own experience working with customers and what we feel are, you know, really critical steps in the revenue lifecycle and ones that that can be easily improved with the right technology and the right processes. The first one is pricing and packaging. This is basically the monetization piece that we've talked about. It's the sales motions, right? Configuring deals, packaging, pricing models, generating those quotes, the whole go-to-market motion, you know, including, you know, how do we upsell or cross-sell our customers? How do we manage our contract pricing terms?
Sales stuff. Okay.
Yeah, sales stuff, service onboarding, you know, do we have a CPI uplift? You know, a lot of really, really basic sales stuff, right? How do we acquire the right customers, right, for our business? It's basically the idea there. And then the second dimension is the rating, mediation, and billing. So you've got customers, now you need to tell them how much they owe you, right? And that includes, you know, if there is usage billing, you know, that needs to be mediated and rated. You know, you need to have all the pricing tables set up, different tiers, depending on different elements of the deal. And so this is where, you know, all the magic of usage billing needs to happen. Systems collect that data, they rate it, you know, against pricing tables, applied discounts and rebates, taxation rules.
That can be quite complex depending on what's involved there.
Yeah, that's honestly, that's where it gets really complex. And, you know, to go back just to the idea of technology driving this, it's, you know, the technology and the ability for customers to buy based on usage that has made, you know, made it so complicated for companies that want to bill that way, now need to have higher technology solutions. Again, modernize those legacy systems to have a system that can keep up with that.
Right, right. Excel is not just going to cover all of those things.
No, it's going to break long before you get your invoice out. Sure. I've seen that a lot.
For sure.
So the third one is accounts receivable, right? So now they've gotten their bill. Hopefully it's accurate and timely, which is a critical function, obviously. And now accounts receivable. So how are the customers going to pay you? Are you offering different payment options? Are you accepting those and applying them to the right accounts, you know, managing the whole collections process, et cetera? That's all things that can directly impact your cash flow. And then number four?
Yeah, we're already at customer lifecycle management.
Number four, yeah. So this is then managing the relationship that you have with your customer, right? If they need support, do they have a place to go? If they want to manage their account or their subscription, do they have to call you and talk to an agent, which is fine? Can they go online and manage their account, which is, you know, a lot less touch for them and for the company, right? Saves the company money if a customer can go on and change their subscription, right. Add or delete elements of that, things like that. And then the revenue management. So obviously, you know, everyone in the financial world in a B2B sense knows about revenue recognition, ASC 606, all of that. It's got to be recognized properly. And so many new companies have arisen just to solve that problem, right? That's a big problem. And, you know, when you get into these multi-element arrangements, where there's, you know, there may be usage, there may be software, there may be professional services, there may be hardware, there's a lot of different elements, and each of those have to be treated differently. So making sure that your revenue management process is working properly, you're in compliance with ASC 606 or whatever other rules you need to follow. You have to have those policies established and they have to be enforced. And that can be helped by having the right system in place. And then the last two, one of those is reporting and controls, just making sure that you are reporting correctly on your historical data. It's getting collected, it's getting tracked. You're able to look at that and analyze that. This area includes your accounting controls, your corporate governance things, audit prep, historical reporting, all of that kind of stuff. And then the last one is your business analytics. So you take that historical data and you look at it into the future, right? Can you forecast your data? Can you forecast revenue and expense more accurately? Can you provide real-time data for that decision-making at various levels within the company? Are you presenting that in executive dashboards and getting the right analytics, things like that? So those seven dimensions are the ones that we feel are the most critical, right? And there may be different ones that different companies want to look at, but you know, everyone has to kind of look at what's the most important to them and build their own matrix. And so just to finish the idea of the matrix, I guess the way we look at it, and we're putting this together now that people can eventually download, but having those seven dimensions down the left side in rows, and then the four maturity levels across the top in columns. And then, you know, a company could go in and kind of assess where they are in each of those.
So when you're doing all these evaluations, you're looking at where you are, what can often get overlooked? Because I think sometimes people are going to get focused on, you know, like you said, getting from point A to point B, right? And trying to be aspirational about making their goals. But is there something more to consider than just increasing revenue, customer satisfaction. I mean, I think those are kind of the big ticket items, but what often gets overlooked when you're just sort of evaluating the process as a whole?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I think, you know, I think what gets overlooked a lot of times is just how important these processes are, right? I think, and how important they can be to a company and the strategic advantage that they can provide. So, you know, a lot of companies, you know, think about the financial functions just as a cost center, right? Here, we're ticking a box. These are things that we have to do to comply with, you know, reporting regulations or whatever. The whole financial function, the whole CFO office can be a lot more.
Right.
And one of the ways that I've seen the CFO role change over time, you know, from having worked with them, you know, several years ago to now seeing the problems that they're facing is that that role is becoming a lot more of a strategic partner with the rest of the business leadership. And there's areas that they can have a direct impact on. And one of those areas is this, you know, financial process area, right? And so I think people overlook the importance of that. Even sometimes CFOs, you know, don't realize the power that they can potentially have to improve their strategic positioning within their industry. So when these processes that we've just talked about are focused on, they're optimized, they're improved, they can become a big strength to the company. And as I said, even a competitive advantage. And then there's a lot of tangible benefits, right? You mentioned revenue and customer satisfaction. Those are real things, and those are things that you can put a number on, right? We know it costs less to retain a customer than it does to acquire a new one. You know, that's a direct impact on the money that the company is spending to acquire a customer and to the bottom line, sure. Right? So it's imperative that companies focus on making and keeping these customers happy. And again, they're not in, you know, 10-year contracts. These are month-to-month subscriptions a lot of times. And so you have to do even more to keep them happy, right?
Sure.
And then with the revenue, right? This can definitely have an increasing effect on revenue as companies are able to monetize those new business models and to do it quickly and easily, right? That's going to directly impact the revenue growth. What company's not looking for that? And then the last thing is also financial, but optimizing those processes that are often overlooked, those seven dimensions, as you optimize those, that can lead to a lot of cost savings. Obviously, that increases your bottom line profitability. You can, if you need fewer people now to send out an invoice, you can now redirect those people into higher value kinds of tasks, right? And that also increases your productivity. When you optimize processes like collections, you know, that's going to speed up your cash flow. And providing accurate billing in a timely manner, that's going to increase your cash flow as well. So there's a lot of direct financial benefits that, CFOs, if they're looking at this, could actually put some real numbers on. So I think that's kind of cool.
We're talking about CFOs, you know, we've talked about front office, we talked about back office, this so-called middle office. I didn't know what that was before I started at Billing Platform. So it's this sort of common name, but it's this really key piece of the revenue lifecycle puzzle. And you just mentioned, I think it's an opportunity to gain some pretty significant strategic advantages. So who is in that so-called middle office? And how and why are getting those processes and procedures for the people who work with those functions and revenue just so imperative?
Yeah, the middle office is a funny term. I've worked in four companies now in this space. And, you know, everyone that works within these companies understands the idea of the middle office. We talk about it. And I've been in marketing in these companies. And so the question has always been, you know, how much do we talk about, you know, the middle office? And, you know, people feel like it describes well what we do, but no one really wants to talk about it because it seems like there might be some confusion in a larger sense, right? I know that there's sure. banks, like especially investment banks, talk about the middle office, but it's a little different. And then, you know, talking to analysts, they never seem to love middle office either. So I don't know. That's why we probably don't.
We don't know why that is, but.
I don't know. It's weird. We don't talk about it that way a lot of times externally, but internally it's, you know, it's fairly meaningful, right? When we talk about the CRM as the front office, right? That interaction with customers, the ERP as the back office, right? Handling those GL, you know, accounting and reporting kinds of functions. The middle office is all that stuff in between, right? You know, billing, invoicing, you know, especially when we get to complex billing that requires validation and a lot more work, right? That's a middle office function versus, you know, the really simple billing that might be, you know, might come out of the back office. But collections, rev rec, customer support, reporting on your billing, there's a lot of that that you can get out. And that's all kind of the middle office. And so the people that do that, you know, obviously are the billing people, you know, whether they're administrators, billing analysts, things like that. There's people that administer contracts. The whole RevOps group, I think, is part of that middle office. Customer support, any compliance people you have. There's a lot of people involved in those processes, whether or not you call it the middle office.
Sure, but these are people that are potentially your points of contact for your customer base.
Exactly. Yeah.
You know, they're interacting potentially, if you're getting these processes or these, you know, descriptions right, these are the people that potentially could be helping you retain customers and reduce churn.
Exactly. Yeah. And, you know, that's a great point. And it's critical that everyone who has those touch points is providing an optimal experience, right? And so I think as we look at those processes and the people, like you just mentioned, but, you know, the technology behind that and the defined processes that are involved, you know, that's when we're going to start to see the benefits of, you know, improving customer satisfaction, increasing retention, you know, and that ability to monetize business models and improve those processes to see that financial impact as well in profitability and cash flow. And again, it's an opportunity to stand out as a company, right? As you leverage these critical processes, you know, you're going to gain that advantage over your customers, right? People leave, you know, companies. I saw something just recently. I can't remember it exactly, but people will leave a subscription company within the month if they've had a bad experience with customer service, you know, about their bill.
Wow, that's fast. Within the month. Wow.
Yeah. And there was some large percent. I don't remember. It was more than 50%, yeah. I think. But so it's just, you know, so important. You know, these processes can have a direct impact on the value that you as a finance person or as anyone in the company involved in these processes is bringing to the company and to your shareholders.
So that stat alone is pretty staggering. You better be working pretty hard to retain customers if, you know, within a month they're like, nope, there's just so many offerings now. There's so many choices. It's a tough, you know, it's just tough to keep customers happy. Like you said before, once you get a customer, maintaining that customer, keeping them happy, reducing churn, those are just some really key elements of your business strategy, or should be some elements of your business strategy.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. So you've been around for a long time in finance and in the revenue space. You know, we work together at Billing Platform, obviously, as we mentioned before, and we're talking a lot about the future. We're talking, you know, because as you said, stuff continues to change. What was it, modernize or die? That was your
modernize or die.
Modernize or die. We're gonna get that on a shirt. So what's ahead? Because the changes, the consumer changes, B2B, B2C, everything, it's going to just continue to evolve when we're talking about revenue lifecycle modernization. So how can your business, if I'm a business owner and I'm trying to think ahead, how can you be prepared? Because we just don't know what changes are going to be ahead, from economic factors to consumer behavior. What can you do in terms of, you know, managing your revenue lifecycle to sort of be ahead of the game, so to speak?
Yeah, no, great question. You know, if we take a step back and look at the big picture, you know, business doesn't change, right? It's always been about giving customers what they want, right? We say the customer is always right, all those kinds of things. Since the very early days of trade and bartering, right? People have been successful when they give customers what they want, right? What has changed is what we sell, you know, those products and services and the way that we sell them, right? That's what continues to evolve. So today, you know, we're obviously in a very technologically enabled world. You know, customers want a lot of things and they want it when they want it and they want to pay for it the way they want to pay for it. And so the customers, the companies that are going to win in this economy and into the future are the ones that can make those things happen, right? Can you make an offering that people are going to want to buy the way they want to buy it and fall in love with it? And that's going to take off, right? So who has the flexibility to pivot when needed? So I think flexibility is one of the keys to future-proofing your business. And then given what we talked about, and you just mentioned about customer satisfaction, retaining is better than acquiring new customers. It does put additional emphasis on keeping those customers happy, right? If they're going to get mad about a billing issue and leave within a month, that's something that you need to take care of, right? And that should be like a number one priority,
right?
For, you know, whether that's for the CFO or for anyone in the business, keeping those customers happy is your number one, right? And so again, flexibility is key there to be able to monetize the business models, take advantage of the opportunities that customers want to pursue. And, you know, and into the future, who knows what other business models? I mean, right now we talk about usage and consumption and, you know, all those kinds of things, but what's AI going to do? How's that going to change the things that we buy and how we buy them? You know, we have to be ready. So
that's the big question, AI, that everything comes back to that, because it's just this big, and I think for a lot of people, not very well understood topic right now of where is this going to take us? Where is this going to go?
Exactly. Yeah. It's such an unknown. And, you know, I've tried to think about, you know, is there a new business model that's going to come out of that or multiple? I don't know. I haven't thought of anything. I'm not smart enough, but there's some guy.
What do you think of it? Let me know.
Right? There's some guy in a garage somewhere who's, you know, hacking out code, trying to figure this thing out. So,
sure.
So flexibility is number one. And then the second thing I would talk about is sustainability, right? Can your business grow into the future? Do you have the systems and the processes and the people that can adapt and change, right? And it's obviously related to flexibility, but sustainability is really, can you do what you need to do to keep your customers happy over time, as well as attract new ones that are going to stick with you?
Yeah, I think that's another thing that I think about, just how my, just for myself within my own life, my billing and my, just how I do payments now is completely different than how I did them even 5 years ago. Things just with consumers and what consumers want and that level of convenience that they want, it really has changed. And I don't know if it's been in the past 2 years, I've really noticed it. So just the ability for businesses to just kind of anticipate that, hey, we're okay today, but we're going to need to be ready to change tomorrow.
Exactly. So I just thought of the AI business model.
Oh, great. Tell me now. Well, do the listeners? Okay. It's just between us, listeners. Okay.
This might fall into the off the wall discussions.
Hey, I'm ready for it.
Right? What if, you know, I mean, we have our phones, right? We have whatever devices we have, and we can go there. We can go almost anywhere, buy something, have it show up, you know, soon after we buy it.
Sure.
The next step is AI figuring out what we need before we even go to buy it.
Yes.
Right? And so it anticipates that, it buys it on our behalf. And by the time we've thought about it, it's already there.
Boom. Sign me up.
Right?
Right. Yeah. We'll negotiate the contracts later for this model. I think it's a great idea. Seriously, though, think about all those things. And that is all the things that show up just in your cookies or, oh, you might like this, you know, when you're buying whatever.
It's just the like advertising. That. It's already there in advertising, right? You Absolutely. Talk about something, you ask your spouse about, oh, maybe we should get this. And then it's in your ads, right? So
absolutely.
I think we're closer than I think.
I'm sure. That's why whenever I'm looking for jewelry for Christmas, I just start talking about it when I'm in earshot of my phone and then hope that my husband will pick that up. Oh, that's great. Matt, it's been so great visiting with you today. I really appreciate all these different perspectives on revenue life, because I think it can be an overwhelming topic. And I think giving people or businesses the ability just to define and take a look at, here's where we are and here's where we want to go. Those are really, I think it's great that there's some sort of, like you said, a matrix or parameters for people to have to sort of take their businesses to the next level.
Yeah. And, you know, we're going to be working on, you know, putting this matrix together in a way that people can download and use if it's helpful to them or to edit that. So I'd just encourage people to, you know, visit the website, you know, stay in touch with us and we'll, you know, give you updates on what we're working on. I did do a webinar recently on a topic that has some slides if anyone wants to go check that out. But yeah, we'll have more coming on this topic, because I think it's been really helpful for me, and I think for Billing Platform, to kind of get our arms around, you know, what this whole modernization effort looks like, and to put some parameters around it, right? Defining it as our, you know, the revenue life cycle, the way we define it. And, you know, hopefully that's helpful for other companies as well. You know, as we've talked to customers, it's been really helpful for them. But, you know, others, you know, we want that to be a useful tool as well. So just continue to check the website and visit.
Absolutely, Matt. You know, I was going to mention that if anybody wants to go check out some of the recent webinars that we've had, also the other podcasts, it is all available right now at Billing Platform social media pages or at www.billingplatform.com. We want to thank you again, Matt, for joining us today. And for our listeners, make sure you check out our next new podcast. You don't want to miss an episode. If you stayed with us this entire podcast here, we even had at the very end, brand new business ideas. You heard it here first. So we'll be back next month with a brand new topics, new insights, and of course, new perspectives on all things revenue. We will, as always, want to thank you for listening and for having your cup of coffee, tea, or whatever makes you happy with us. Cheers.